Hi, I'm Ray. Welcome to my podcast and another episode, this time about Bletchley Park, which is in Milton Keynes, UK. Bletchley Park, you've probably heard of it. If not, it's where the code breakers were, the Colossus computer, so named because it was colossal. It was a massive thing, full of valves, tubes, as you'd call them in America. Hundreds and hundreds of valves. When I saw that, I just stood there in awe. Absolutely fantastic. And it was all working, all clicking and clunking away. Absolutely fantastic to stand there and watch the thing. And the Enigma machine. You've heard of the Enigma machine, which was used in World War II to send and receive codes. Now, what happened was the Germans sent Morse code and the messages were encrypted. So they were like groups of letters, like groups of five letters or whatever. So it didn't make any sense. You had to decode it. What they did was, on their Enigma machine, they typed out the proper message in German, of course. And what came out of the machine was the code. So that, in the form of Morse code, was sent out to their troops or whoever, instructions, etc., plans, what's going on, where to move, positions. All this was sent out by Morse code. So perhaps people on the front line or units, wherever, ships, U-boats, whatever. It was all sent to them in Morse code, just these groups of letters. So anyone listening in, it didn't mean anything to them. You couldn't decipher it. It was what the Germans called the unbreakable code. Now, at Bletchley Park, they actually broke that code with the use of Colossus, the computer, the colossal Colossus computer. You may have heard of Alan Turing. He was one of the main people there, one of the main code breakers. He built, with the others, he built this Colossus machine and the bomb, what they call the bomb, which is all part of this decoding equipment. Absolutely amazing stuff. The people that did this were obviously geniuses, you know, not the ordinary man in the street like me. I mean, I wouldn't have a clue where to start. They were mathematicians. They were just brilliant. But what is also brilliant, I mean, they decoded this stuff, the unbreakable code. But I think, to be fair, what is also brilliant is the people that invented the Enigma machine in the first place. They must have been geniuses as well to come up with a system like that. I mean, normally a code where you perhaps say, right, the letter A is, you send it as B, the letter B is C, etc., until you get to letter Z, that's A. That's a very, very simple code that even a child could break. But to come up with a code that can't be broken just by people alone, that needs a computer to do it, to try all the different variations. I think, I can't remember now, what, there are millions and, or billions and trillions of possibilities, and you would need a computer. You can't just use your brain. You can't sit at a desk, which is what they did originally. You can't just sit there trying to work it all out, looking for patterns in the code, you know, trying to see whether there were any patterns. That just doesn't work, because also, to make it even more complicated, difficult to break, the code changed every 24 hours at midnight. The whole thing changed. So you spend 24 hours, you're working on it, you think you're just about getting somewhere. Midnight, that's it, scrap all that. It's all old hat, it's all finished. New code. Imagine that. Without Alan Turing's machinery, the Colossus thing, the bomb as they called it, they would never ever have broken the code. I'm getting ahead of myself now. When I first arrived at Bletchley Park, the first thing you notice when you walk in is this mansion house, this huge house. They call it the mansion house. Lovely grounds. In front of it, there's this large lake with a fountain in the middle. It's a wonderful place. There's some lovely old trees there. It really is a lovely place. I believe that whoever owned it, whatever they did, the initial plan was it was meant to be a sort of rich chap, don't you know, and his hunting friends and his aristocracy type friends. That's what it was meant to be. So, of course, you can't have army and sort of military vehicles going in and out of the place because the locals would think, hello, you know, what's going on here? Something is going on. And the first mistake I made, I'm looking around the grounds thinking, well, where are the aerials? All this receiving going on, where are the aerials? It then struck me. I thought, no, hang on, they're not going to have huge aerial masts and towers and wires everywhere, because apart from the locals then realising this was something to do with the war effort, any enemy aircraft, perhaps reconnaissance or any enemy aircraft flying over, would look down and think, hello, what's all this? What's this massive place here full of aerials? You know, we better bomb that. So obviously there were no aerials there. What I discovered was there were WI units, known as Y units, wireless interceptors. Now these were dotted all over the country, run by Army, Navy, and also, what I found very interesting, radio amateurs, because I'm a licensed radio amateur, and I just imagine myself back in those days. I'm a radio amateur, I've got a license, I operate Morse code, and I get a knock on the door. Perhaps a man or two men in suits, bowler hats, briefcases. Can we come in? You're a licensed radio amateur? Yes, I am. Right, we'd like to come in. Perhaps my wife's there, or family, or whatever. And they say, we'd like to speak to you in private, if we may. So, okay, go into my shack, where my radio stuff is, close the door. What's all this about? Then they explain, we want you, if you agree, to listen around shortwave bands for Morse code messages. Yes, okay, well, that's what I do anyway. I'm a radio amateur. These are Morse code messages sent by the enemy, and they are in the form of groups of letters. They are in a code. When you have received them, we want you to write down on your paper. I think they had proper sheets of paper printed out that you fill in the time, the date, obviously the frequency that you listen to this, and then all the letters that you received. Then these will be picked up by a motorcycle courier and taken to, now obviously they didn't say where they were taken to, but they were taken to Bletchley Park. So they got a lot of radio amateurs. They had to sign the Official Secrets Act. Now, say I'm one of these radio amateurs. My family are listening, and from my radio room, they can hear Morse code. They don't know what it is. I can't tell them. They just think, oh, he's in contact with some other Morse code amateur nerd. Not at all. I'm actually writing down encoded messages from the enemy, and they are being picked up by courier, a motorcyclist, and taken to Bletchley Park. Not that I knew Bletchley Park. So, all very exciting. I suppose the radio amateurs that they used were retired people, because thinking about it, the young men would all be off at war, of course, so it would be old boys, like me, which would have been nice for them, because they could have thought, the exciting bit would have been that they're actually playing a part in the war effort, even though they're in their 60s or 70s even, they're still able to play a part in the war effort by receiving the Morse code, the encoded messages in Morse code. There are a lot of huts there, loads of huts, wooden huts, like the old school huts we used to have. And this is where all the offices were, a lot of the offices anyway. And it's interesting, I found Alan Turing's office. It's fascinating to see his desk, his chair, and imagine him sitting there, perhaps racking his brains, his mathematical brain, working out codes, working out plans to build the bomb machine, the Colossus computer. And it was a strange feeling to stand in that office next to his chair and desk. It was just, I don't know, it was strange to think that that was where he sat and worked. I remember many years ago, I went to Arundel Castle, and there's a room there that was Queen Matilda? I can't remember. Queen was someone's room back in the 1100 or 1200 and something. That was her room. I think she was in prison there for some reason. And there was a stone seat at the, in the window, by the window, a stone sort of windowsill where you sit and look out of the window, which was only like a slot thing. And I sat there, and I imagined her sitting there hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And it was weird. It was a strange feeling. And imagine her sitting there. If she had known that in hundreds and hundreds of years' time, someone would sit in that very spot and look out of the window that she was looking out of. Most strange. Bletchley Park is a huge place. I forget how many acres. It's a huge place. There are garages there where they had their own mechanics, where the cars were kept. Obviously, they couldn't have, as I've said, military vehicles, but they had nice cars there, and there are some there on display. moving around the various huts, all offices, all the desks and chairs were there, angle poised table lamps and that. I don't know whether it's all original or whether it's all been put back as a sort of mock-up. I would imagine it's original. I don't see why anyone would have taken all the furniture away and then put it all back again. In the mansion house, in the what I would call the front room, the lounge, which is huge, that's full of desks and chairs where the young women would have sat. And the interesting thing is the way they've set it up, they've obviously recreated it as best they can. By each desk chair, there's a handbag. And that's exactly what would have happened. The young women would have come in, hang their coats up, sit at the desk, put the handbag on the floor by the chair, not on the desk in the way. The telephones are there, the typewriters, bits of paperwork, all sorts of things like that. It really is. The people at Bletchley Park have done an amazing job. If you're going to go there, it's best to avoid the weekend. Well, I went up, I drove up on Saturday, stayed 3 nights actually in Milton Keynes. And I spent all day Sunday at Bletchley Park, which was very busy. For lunch there's a kind of restaurant place, and that we had to wait for a table. We went back on the Monday, hardly anyone there. The restaurant was just a few people in there. It was virtually empty. And we had a far better look round. We did the whole thing again. And also the computer centre, which is a little walk. It's still in the grounds, but a little walk away from the mansion house. And that is absolutely full of computers, from very early computers going back to Amstrad days and before, ZX81, up to modern stuff, and also huge sort of mainframe type stuff. I'm not overly interested in computers, but it is fascinating to look around. And there's also a NATS centre, National Air Traffic Services, with a mock-up of various their radar screen and all this sort of thing. Again, highly interesting. I had a look at the RSGB National Radio Centre. That's the Radio Society of Great Britain, which is the amateur radio society. They help amateurs with interference. There's a monthly magazine. And they had a radio station set up there. And of course, when I arrived, they said, do you know anything about amateur radio? And I told them my call sign. Oh, come in, sit down, have a go on the radio. I did have a little tune round, but I didn't speak to anyone because I obviously wanted to get round and look at the whole of Bletchley Park. But that was nice. The lads there made me more than welcome. Very nice to meet them. And fantastic gear they've got set up there. Quite a lot of money's worth. Puts mine to shame. But that's something else that it might be of interest if you're a radio amateur or just even a shortwave listener. You know, you might want to have a look around there. They've got some lovely aerials as well. They were actually speaking through a satellite while I was there, working through a satellite. The uplink, I think, was 2 metres and the downlink was 70 centimetres, for those of you that know about amateur radio stuff. This isn't an advert for Bletchley Park, I hasten to add, but it's just telling you roughly a little bit about it, my experience there. There's so much. I mean, I could go on for hours. Yeah, please don't, I hear you saying. But no, seriously, you know, even if you want to take the kids, there's all sorts to do there. It's interesting. It was a 40s weekend where everyone dressed up in 1940s gear on the Sunday. That was quite interesting. And they've got military vehicles there, and they had vintage cars, all sorts of different things to look at. As I said, I spent the whole day there on Sunday and the whole day there on the Monday. And the food in the little restaurant there was excellent. I think I'll end the episode here. Otherwise, you'll all get bored and go to sleep. If you wake up, have you gone to sleep already? That's a little bit about Bletchley Park. Hope you enjoyed it. See you on the next episode. Bye-bye for now.